Good morning. I'm Khaki Walton. Checking on the arts is made possible by contributing listeners and the Memphis Symphony Orchestra. There's a new exhibit at the Brooks Museum of Art that explores the evolution, function, and craft of weaponry and armor across time and continents. It's Armed and Dangerous, Art of the Arsenal, and that's on exhibit now and will be up through March 11th. Marina Pacini is the chief curator at the Brooks, and she curated this exhibit. Maybe a little outside of her, good to see you this morning.
Thank you, Kathy.
Guns and things like that, not normally what you deal with, or cudgels or things like that.
It's way out of my comfort range, and I have to say, I also find it pretty funny. I'm a pacifist, but I was the one who really wanted this exhibition at the Brooks. I'm really excited about having it here.
This is not something that glorifies war. We're looking at the art of these items that were creative to either be defensive or offensive, and it's amazing the detailed work that goes into these. And this covers every aspect of ancient history, really, and up to modern history.
The exhibition spans basically 1000 BCE to about 1900, and they're objects from Europe, Africa, Asia, the South Pacific, and North America. And so, yes, you're absolutely right. It covers a wide range of materials, and not all of them were necessarily made for actual warfare. Some of them, for example, there's a suit of armor that was intended for jousting, and there are a lot of articles of objects that were also made for ceremonial purposes.
Right.
And one of the things I find interesting is that these ceremonial objects are weapons. I mean, there were things, for example, maces, if you think about it, started off as offensive weapons, and yet they become transformed into, you know, the kinds of objects that royalty carries with them, you know, their staffs. Halberds, we've got three really nice examples, and again, weapons that were intended to be used in warfare. Well, now the folks at the Vatican, the Swiss Guard, stand there with halberds. So there's this interesting transition that happens between objects being functional and then taking on ceremonial roles. But you're absolutely right. One of the things to me that's most fascinating is that all of these objects, whether originally intended to be weapons or ultimately ceremonial, are covered with different kinds of decoration. And I think it says something about humanity that this impulse to decorate things, regardless of what their ultimate function is.
So, I mean, one of the reasons that they decided to carve things, you wanted to scare the other person if you were doing it you were the offensive guy, and you wanted, if something looked like a really scary gargoyle or a really scary animal, maybe somebody would just go, I don't think I want to do this, and turn around and run away.
Absolutely. The helmets, this is one of the things I love, is being able to compare. We have a Greek helmet from about, I think it's about 800 BCE. We have a couple of medieval armor helmets. We have a Japanese helmet, which is paired with a Menpo. And all the Menpo, which is a face mask, is designed to be terrifying. It's got a facial expression that's intended to intimidate. And all three of these, the Greek helmet, the medieval armor, and the Japanese helmet and Menpo, covered basically the whole head so that, I mean, in the case of the Greek helmet and the Menpo, you can only see the person's eyes. So the warrior becomes that much more terrifying because they have lost their connection to humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And so absolutely, intimidation is a large part of what's involved with some of these weapons.
Can you imagine, though, how difficult it must have been to wear the thing that you could only see through the eye? How can you, somebody could come up, you don't have any peripheral vision, it would seem like?
Well, there are even bigger issues, for example, with the medieval armor. That stuff was so heavy.
Yeah.
And you're totally enclosed in it. One of the interesting things that I learned in the process of doing the research for this is that one of the things that the knights ran into, the problems they ran into, is that they got overheated and suffered from dehydration. Now, the helmets are all designed to have face plates that can open up and the squires could come and give them some water. But you think about them as being awkward and all of that, but you don't think about the fact that they're roasting inside of there and, you know, potentially fainting from dehydration.
So, and these things weighed just an enormous amount.
The medieval armor did. The European stuff did. The Japanese samurai suits, in contrast, you know, they're in response to the fact that southern Japan is a hotter, more humid climate. Mm-hmm. Those suits are made, they're much lighter. They are made out of, you know, different elements that are held together with silk or cloth, so that they're much, they breathe much better than the medieval armor did. They're also easier to move in, although one of the things that one of the experts says is that because those individual suits of armor were designed, they're like bespoke suits in that the individual was measured entirely so that everything, well, it had to. I mean, it wasn't going to fit if it wasn't specifically crafted for the person who commissioned the suit, and that there's so many different parts that in actual fact they move more than you think they would. Now, that's not to say that they aren't really heavy. We have this terrific, the education department did a wonderful job with this interpretive gallery, and they've got three sample helmets in there, and you put one on, and, you know, when we first saw them, we're like, oh my God, you know, how's a little kid going to put this on? The exhibition was organized by the Berkshire Museum, and they specifically designed them that way to give you a sense of what it was like to wear that massive suit of armor. And one of the things that's extraordinary, there are three suits of them in there. The decoration on them is just absolutely extraordinary. One of them has some Turkish influence, and the helmet is shaped like an onion. I mean, they're just... they're covered with unbelievable gilding and decorative panels that actually what's interesting about it is they're glorious to look at, but that decoration actually made them less functional in that if, you know, somebody came at you with a lance, the point could get caught in the decoration. You know, originally, they were much smoother with the idea that anything... a point that came at you would slide right off.
Right.
Well, this beautiful decoration subverts that. But we also have to understand the people who commissioned these had a lot of money, and one of the things that they were doing was, you know, putting on display their power, their status, and obviously their wealth. They're making a personal statement. So you've got some competing claims in terms of how and why they were making these objects.
So a lot of the things that we see in this exhibit go back to nature, which makes sense.
Absolutely. There's this beautiful Indo-Persian helmet that's got a set of horns that come up out of the top of it, and I've juxtaposed it with a wall of antlers. There are instances like that where the maker is clearly referencing the fact that, you know, nature, you know, animals have had defensive, offensive weapons, the antlers that we've got examples of impalas. There's an elk, I think, and wildebeest in there. And you can, you know, see that they're actually, the makers of the armaments are looking at nature and how nature created armor of its own. And then we also have, I think one of my favorites is this beautiful sword from Benin. It's 19th century. And it's the extremely unusual. It's from the collection of the Berkshire Museum, and they consulted with African specialists, and they said it's very rare. There's not a lot of information on it, and their understanding of it is that it was there's this chameleon shape, beautiful chameleon shape on the blade, which is actually an outstretched hand. And so when you point this thing at somebody, it looks like you're pointing a hand at them.
Oh, I see. And this is in column. If you get the Brooks Museum, the catalog that comes in the mail, column, you'll see a picture of that. So this is what we're looking at right here with the chameleon.
Absolutely,
on it?
Absolutely. Now, one of the things that they do know is that this would have nobody knows whether it was actually used or if it was purely ceremonial. But one way or the other, it was certainly something that conveyed great status and would have been owned by a high-ranking official in the military, the political hierarchy. One of the other things that's really great about it is the hand actually has the fingernails are gilded, and what that is probably representing is this regiment of female warriors known as the Mino, or our mothers, who were very unique to the kingdom of, I'm not sure how to pronounce this, Dahomey, which is present-day Benin, mm-hmm. and they served as bodyguards and elite soldiers. So the hand most likely represents them, but it's this amazing amalgam of the form of the hand with this chameleon on it that's, I mean, it's just extraordinary. It's a really beautiful object, and I think it gets at some, one of the things that I find most interesting about this exhibition, there's this interesting tension between the fact that these objects are often lethal, but they're also incredibly beautiful as aesthetic objects, and makes for some interesting thinking.
Yes, it does. So we see civilization evolve throughout this exhibit. I mean, the way that weapons were first made out of stone, and then they tried bronze, and then they tried, and we see things become better functionally, less heavy, and things like that.
Well, one of the places that's very is captured really well is in the section on guns. They range. I'm not going to go through the whole development of it, but there's basically the development of rifles, where the focus is really on the ignition systems, and the earliest system required that you had a live match, the piece of cloth that was actually lit. Now, this is a problem if you're a soldier, because at nighttime somebody can see that lit piece of cloth and you become a target, and if it rained, it would get obviously it would be blown out, washed out, watered out. And so what happens is the technology develops. It goes through a couple of different forms before you end up with, in the later 19th century, percussion, which are closer to the bullets that we think of today. So there are examples of matchlock, wheel lock, flint lock, and percussion guns in the exhibition, and you can see what happens. One of the things that amazed me was the earliest gun was made in some place in, which is probably today, Germany, and it would have been imported, and it's what the colonists would have used. The thing was so heavy that when we were going to put it into the case, it really, two of us were holding it, and none of us could imagine what that must have been like to try to hold this thing up and shoot it when you're spending most of your time just trying to maintain it, much less aim it. Obviously, they got lighter as the technology improved.
Yeah. Well, that's one thing that's fascinating to me about this exhibit, because this will tell you how men or women, in the case of the people you were just describing, how they fought and how it was done.
Absolutely. There are discussions about how some of these objects were used. I mean, that's not the central thrust of the exhibition, but it absolutely, I mean, that's one of the things that I find so fascinating about it. It's an exhibition that has a lot of different entry points. You can go in and find out about, you know, history, about the development of technology. You can find out about, politics and different cultures, and also issues of, you know, personal identity. So there are lots of different ways to approach it. I think it's going to have a real wide appeal. We're hoping to attract some new audiences, people who might not ever have visited us before. Mm-hmm. And we've got all sorts of great programming organized in conjunction with it. There's a tea and tour on Thursday. Mm-hmm. Saturday's Creation Station, it's Arm Yourself. It's from 11 to 1. The education department always does terrific things, and they've organized a program with some local students. It's called Peaceful Warriors Aim for Change. And the students have gone around and documented people who are peacefully making change in the community. community, and there's going to be an exhibition of their photographs, their writings, and then, of course, the fabulous Andrea Lyle has organized a terrific film series. Check the website. She's organized things from Akira Kurosawa films, Jim Jarmusch, and of course Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
How could you show the helmets without showing the film, Monty Python and the Holy Grail? Well, that's great. And Andrea always does a great job programming films. And so a lot of different things going on in conjunction with this exhibit. There are guided tours, and you can find out about everything on the Brooks Museum website, brooks.org. This is pretty incredible. This exhibit spans 3,000 years, and you have over 125 objects. And it's just a massive undertaking, and I know that this has been fun for you, just like it's fun for me to learn about new things every day in my job. I know that this was something that might have been outside your comfort zone, but boy, you tackled it and learned something too along the way.
Now, the objects are extraordinary. It's one of those things where every time I go into the galleries, I see something new, and I'm just bowled over by the amazing craftsmanship involved in the making of these objects. It really is a fantastic exhibition.
Well, before we leave, you told me that the opening reception for members was last week, and the adults were having some fun playing dress up.
As I said, the interpretive space that the education department put together is great, and the adults were all in there trying on the camouflage and photographing themselves in the samurai suit and playing with the helmets and the Kevlar.
The Kevlar vest and stuff?
They had a Kevlar vest in there. So everybody's having a really good time. But it is also educational.
It's very educational, and it's very beautiful. And the sword that came with the invitation, that in and of itself is worthy of an exhibition. But there are over 125 things that you can see. And this is something that the whole family can take part in. I mean, Family Day coming up, as Marina mentioned. So go to brooksmuseum.org to find out about everything, or you can call 544-6200. Armed and Dangerous, Art of the Arsenal, on exhibit now at the Brooks Museum of Art, and that will be up through March 11th. And I want to thank the curator of the exhibit, Marina Pacini, for being my guest this morning. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Khaki.